Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisecha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarane Trinadapi Sunichena Tarariva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Harinama 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 Iva Kevalam Kalo Nastyeva 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 Gatiranyata. So 3 months ago I began doing this monthly class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And each month we covered the first three verses. Because those first three verses are the fundamental mission statement and foundation for the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, tonight, we begin with the actual narration. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. As I have been preaching in the last few months, this one line from the Tulsi Kirtan. Please give me the privilege of devotional service. So whenever I come here, it's about a 1 hour drive from where I live. And on the way, I am listening to Kirtan. And again, on the way here, Krishna was reminding me within my heart that this facility to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam is a privilege. So I request that you please forgive my shortcomings, my deficiencies. I am trying my best to repeat the words of my spiritual master. There is a very powerful statement from one of the Upanishads. Yasya deve para bhaktir, yata deve tatha gurau, tasyaite kat hita hiyartha, prakashante mahatmanaha. This shloka instructs us that who is capable of understanding the Vedic philosophy? Because it is not a question of simply scholarship. It's not simply a matter of book learning, but it is a question of realization. And that realization is a gift. It's a gift from Krishna. As Krishna himself says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Mata smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Krishna tells us that knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness is not simply up to us as individuals. Ultimately, it is controlled by Krishna in the heart, Paramatma. And this verse that I quoted from the Upanishad says that if I have implicit faith in Krishna, implicit faith that Krishna is the God of all other gods, that he is supreme, which he says repeatedly in his Bhagavad Gita, which is why he tells us to surrender to him, Mam Ekam, only, exclusively, because he is the God of all other gods. That's why he says that. So if I have implicit faith that Krishna is the Supreme, and at the same time, I have implicit faith that my spiritual master is the representative of Krishna in my heart. If those two things are present, then the understanding, the meaning, the purport of all the Vedic knowledge is revealed to that person and that person only. So I must always offer my respects to my spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And I must have implicit faith that what he is giving me is not his philosophy. Recently, somebody was saying that Srila Prabhupada was creating his own philosophy. That's total nonsense. Prabhupada was presenting Krishna's philosophy, not his own philosophy. That's why the book he wrote is called Bhagavad Gita as it is. He presented the conclusion of Krishna. So my spiritual master is presenting Krishna's teachings as they are. And I must have implicit faith that Krishna is the Supreme. Let us begin. This first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is entitled Questions by the Sages. So let us hear now, and I will comment when necessary. The narration begins. Once in a holy place, in the forest of Naimisharanya, great sages headed by the sage Shaunaka assembled to perform a great thousand-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. Why is this Naimisharanya a holy place? Because it is said that Lord Brahma conceived of a wheel for the universe, and the hub of that wheel, Naimisharanya. So it is a sacred place, which is why these sages have assembled. This is taking place after the battle of Kurukshetra, after the disappearance of Krishna and his dynasty. It is taking place very early in the age of Kali. It says here that they were going to perform sacrifice for 1,000 years. And we have a hard time even paying attention to a 40-minute class in the temple. But they were going to sit for 1,000 years and perform a sacrifice. Why are they able to do that? Sattvagun. We, not so much sattvagun, maybe a little. Lots of raja and tamas. But these sages, sattvagun. That's how they're able to do a sacrifice for 1,000 years. Then the last point. They were not doing the sacrifice for any material benefit. They were doing it for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. Because this whole Srimad Bhagavatam is simply describing the beautiful relationship between God and his devotees. Together, that is what is Srimad Bhagavatam. It continues. One day, after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. Now, what is significant here? They began their activities in the morning. Morning is the best time for spiritual life, not 10 o'clock at night. If you want to do proper spiritual activities, it is done in the morning. For instance, even Krishna himself showed that when he was living with his only 16,108 wives in Dwaraka. It's explained in the Bhagavatam how Krishna was embraced by his 16,108 wives in his 16,108 palaces. But when the rooster would make its sound, which is way before sunrise, I know. How do I know? Because there's an ISKCON temple in Tucson. They have roosters. And I was given a room right outside the rooster. And sure enough, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, that rooster started doing his kirtan. So it confirmed what is described. So it's explained, when the rooster makes its sound, Krishna would immediately get up from bed, even though he's being embraced by the goddess of fortune, such as Rukmini. He would immediately get up, wash his hands and feet, and begin his spiritual practice. For Krishna, what was that spiritual practice? Meditation. And who is he meditating on? Himself. Why? Should we also do that? No. The explanation is, meditation means meditation on the absolute truth. The absolute truth is one of three things: impersonal Brahman, localized supersoul, or Bhagavan. Krishna is all three. So Krishna had no other alternative but to meditate on himself, because he is the absolute truth. What, you want Krishna to meditate on something not the absolute truth? No. So we should not imitate Krishna thinking, oh, Krishna meditated on himself, I'm also going to meditate on myself. That would be an improper conclusion. We should be meditating on the absolute truth. And the ultimate phase of the absolute truth, right here, Krishna. And that will be explained in the next chapter. I won't go into detail now. When we come to that verse, I will do the whole class on that one verse, because it's so essential. So the sages are doing their spiritual beginning in the morning. Now, they have selected a guru. Even though they are themselves great sages, they're intelligent enough to know that we need to hear from a guru. So why have they selected Suta Goswami? There's a reason. There's two reasons. Prior to this event, Suta Goswami's father was Romaharshan Suta. Romaharshan Suta was elevated to the Vyasasan by great sages, but Romaharshan Suta made an offense and he was killed by Lord Balaram, Krishna's brother. Balaram killed him, not with his plow, not with his club, but with a blade of grass. So Balaram knew that this Romaharshan Suta had the sin of pride. And Balaram said he is unfit to sit on that Vyasasan because of that pride. Balaram came, just touched him with the blade of grass, instantly killed. The sages and brahmanas said to Balaram, Balaram, We bless this Roma Harshan, and we blessed him with long life. Balaram said, okay, if you like, I can bring him back to life if you like. That's God. God can kill someone and also bring them back to life. The sages said, no, not necessary. So Balaram said, okay, the benedictions you gave to him, we can give to his son. That is who this Suta Goswami is. He was given the benediction by those sages, and he continued the speaking. The other reason why they have selected Suta is because, as we'll hear in coming up, they want to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And Suta Goswami was there in the audience when Shukadev was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. Not only that, while Shukadev was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, towards the end, he pointed to Suta Goswami and told everybody, this Suta Goswami will later on repeat this Bhagavatam for the sages of Naimisharanya. And that's exactly where we're picking up. Shukadev predicted it. Here it is. So for those two reasons, these sages have selected Suta as their acharya. And making inquiries, because that is what spiritual life is about. What is Bhagavad Gita? Questions. Who raises the questions? Arjuna. Why? He's bewildered. He's lamenting. He has lost composure. That's why that verse in chapter 2. Shishyasteham shadimang tuang prapanam. Arjuna confesses to Krishna, I am confused. I have lost all composure. You kindly instruct me. That's the turning point of Bhagavad Gita. And then Krishna says, oh, you want me to be your guru? You mean we're not friends anymore? Okay. Krishna assumed the role of guru, started to instruct him. And you see throughout Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks a question, Krishna answers it. Another question, another question. At the end, Krishna asks his question. So Arjuna, I've told you everything. What is your decision? And the inference is that if Arjuna still wanted more, Krishna was willing to repeat the whole Bhagavad Gita for Arjuna. But Arjuna's smart. He just needs to be told once, not like men, you know, ladies. How many times you have to tell your husband to do something? 1, 2, 3, like my wife, 108 times. But Arjuna's not like that. He heard from, you agree? Huh? Should I ring the bell? Yep, they agree. So Arjuna accepted. That's why Arjuna says that, yes, I will do as you instruct. And then he fights the war. Who won? Arjuna won. And Krishna showed him. When he showed the universal form, Arjuna saw all the Kauravas, what were they doing? Entering the mouth of Krishna, being smashed by his teeth, including Bhishma. Krishna told Arjuna, all these Kauravas and even your people, they're not going home. Only you 5 Pandavas are remaining. Then the universal form tells Arjuna, Nimitta Matram Bhava Savyasa, I want you to be my instrument. Arjuna agreed to be that instrument. So spiritual life means questions and answers. And throughout this 18,000 verses of Bhagavatam, same format. Questions are asked. Like this opening section is between the sages and Suta. Later, as we get towards the end of first canto, Shukadev appears in the final chapter. There's no Shukadev until the final chapter of the first canto, 19 chapters. The first 19 chapters is all this discussion between Sutta and the sages headed by Shonaka. In the final chapter, chapter 19, Parikshit has been cursed. He's sitting down on the bank of the Ganges, and Shukadev appears. So in second canto, Shukadev begins to answer Parikshit's questions. Let us continue. The sages said, "Respected Sutta, you are completely free from all vice. You are well versed in all the scriptures famous for religious life, and in the Puranas and histories as well, for you have gone through them under proper guidance and also have explained them." So what are the key points here? This first point is important. Completely free from all vice. That is the qualification to sit here. That's why Prabhupada did not accept just anybody as disciple. They had to give up the four vices: illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling. If somebody is involved in these things, they're not allowed to sit here. Disqualified, according to the sages. What is this seat? It is the seat of Vyas. I have to be acquainted with the knowledge of the Vyas and the philosophy of the Vyas. Then I'm allowed to sit here and speak. I can't spout Nirantara philosophy. There's no such thing as Nirantara Sanghita. No. I have to present Vyasadeva's philosophy. That's the obligation. Okay, so you have to become free from all vice. Number two, well versed in the scriptures famous for religious life. So if you're going to sit here, you have to know your stuff. Just like there, let's say you have a legal problem. So you go into the phone book. There's hundreds and hundreds of lawyers. But you're going to do your due diligence, find the best lawyers. You've seen over the years when there's these very serious crimes, people who have the money, they're able to buy the best top-notch lawyers who can get them out of their predicament. They don't just look at some, oh, let's get somebody on the corner. You don't want a 7-Eleven lawyer. You want the Rolls-Royce lawyer. But the Rolls-Royce lawyer, what does it require? Money, money, sweeter than honey. So that is the defect of a democracy. That is the defect. And this is even mentioned later on in 12th canto. In the 12th canto is the prediction of what is Kali Yuga. And it says right there, in Kali, it's predicted, Mother Earth is speaking in the 12th canto. And she says that in Kali Yuga, no money, no justice. And we've seen, right? And they're even now openly saying it on the news stations. What are they saying? They're saying, there's two kinds of justice. Justice for the rich, justice for the poor. Justice for the rich is a whole different, they get lots of leeways. For instance, remember this phrase, too big to fail? Remember that? Right? The banksters, which I call cranksters, and we bailed them out, remember? 2007, 2008, we bailed them out. Why? Oh, we're too big to fail. And now their slogan is too big to jail. Yeah, so the rich get one kind of justice, and we get economy justice. This is Kali Yuga, predicted by Mother Earth in the 12th canto. It's all there. That's why this Srimad Bhagavatam is so valuable. You know exactly what to look forward to. You know what else says in the 12th canto? Don't worry about whether it's Republican or Democrat. Bhagavatam says Kali Yuga means tax, tax, more tax. That's what Bhagavatam says. They'll disguise it, they'll hide it, but we are going to pay and pay and pay and pay. And as Kali Yuga progresses, it'll be so bad that we will become completely frustrated and go live in the forest, because civilization will have become completely unbearable. It will no longer be civilization as Kali Yuga progresses. So, conclusion, get out. Go back home, back to Godhead as soon as possible. Don't think, I can come back again. It's not going to be so great. Okay. So, Suta Goswami knows his stuff. He knows the scriptures. Just like today, I spent several hours studying all week long. When I know that it's time to come here, I spend lots of time, so that when I sit, I have something to share. Now it says, and you also know the Puranas. Yes, the Puranas are also very important. And the histories, itihasas. For instance, in the Mahabharata, there are many little itihasas. For instance, this week I was reading the section in the Mahabharata about Markandeya. But then today I said, I want to know more about Markandeya. And he's there in 12th canto. So the Mahabharata just had a little description, but the Bhagavatam had three chapters on Markandeya. Everything is so nice here in Bhagavatam. And you have gone through them under proper guidance. That means guru, that means training. It means discipline. The sages continue. Being the eldest learned Vedantist, O Suta Goswami, you are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Godhead. And you also know other sages who are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. So this I already mentioned. You are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasa. So that's also key. What's the knowledge of Vyas? Four Vedas, 108 Upanishads, Mahabharata. And what's the most important part of Mahabharata? Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Actually, this Bhagavatam will tell us later. The whole purpose of the Mahabharata book is to read Bhagavad Gita. That's the real purpose. Yes, the real thing is to get people, sneak it in there, read Bhagavad Gita. So Vyasadeva has the Puranas, Mahabharata, Vedanta Sutra, 108 Upanishads, and this book, Srimad Bhagavatam, his final masterpiece. And we learned in the opening three verses, if you remember, Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the tree of knowledge called Vedas. Ripened fruit. When you go to somebody's house, do you want the unripe mango or the ripe, juicy mango? Which one are you going to take? Ah, of course, the reddish one, and you can smell. Or do you want that hard green one? No, you want the ripened. Bhagavatam is ripened fruit. And we also learned in the last class, last month, that this sweet ripened fruit became more sweet because who is going to speak it? Shukadev. The parrot-like Shukadev. He made it more sweet. Just like Gujaratis. You make this thing rus. Yes? Rus. No, I'm not Shrikant. Rus. Mango rus. And what do you put on top? Ghee. Not oil. Not canola oil. Ghee. How sweet is that rus? Very nice, right? And then when you add the ghee, even nicer. So Shukadeva Goswami took that ripe Bhagavatam and made it sweeter. Not Shrikant. Rus. Everybody loves Shrikant, I know, but that's not the analogy. Now it says that Vyasadeva is incarnation of God. He's called Bhagavan Rishi. He's God in the form of a Rishi. God has many, many types of incarnations. So Vyasadeva, he's not an ordinary conditioned soul. And if you read Mahabharata, the opening sequence, when he's called by his mother, right? There is the description of Vyasadeva and his superhuman powers. And he comes in and out of the Mahabharata. And so many, he appears to the Pandavas. He appears to try to preach to his son, Dhritarashtra. He's coming in and out. He is incarnation of God. Now it says that Sutta, you are well versed in physical and metaphysical. So we all know what is physical knowledge. That's what's taught in Harvard, UCLA. That's physical knowledge. But metaphysical, that's taught here. Metaphysical means a higher order or level. Supernatural knowledge. Bhagavad Gita is the beginning of supernatural knowledge. Why? What's the first lesson? You're not that physical body. Where are you learning that? In Harvard. They don't teach you that in Harvard. No. You want to learn that you're not the body, that you have to come to a temple. And therefore, if someone is going to sit and speak, they have to be firmly convinced that they are not the physical body, that they're spirit soul. The first lesson of Bhagavad Gita. The sages continue, and because, Sutta, you are submissive, this is important, because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. That is key. Submissive. That's the quality of a disciple. You don't accept a spiritual master to challenge him. It's like, why would you go to a doctor and then challenge him after he gives you his diagnosis? Doc, you don't know what you're talking about. Why would you waste your time and money? Right? No, you go to somebody and the idea is submissive. By the way, that's exactly what Krishna told Arjuna in chapter 4. Tad vidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. You have to be submissive. Not that, hey, Gurudev. Gurudev's going to want me because, you know, I'm so good. And no, Gurudev's going to accept you. No. Gurudev wants to teach somebody who is submissive. Then you get the blessings. That's when you get the blessings. When you are submissive to the spiritual master. Yes. Gentle disciple. Gentle, these words that Prabhupada is choosing in translating. submissive and gentle. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have learned scientifically from them. Oh, I love this word, scientifically. I've told the story so many times that somebody, I was in Cal State, LA, giving a class to a religions class, and the lady objective, how can you say this is science? Science means biology, chemistry, like this. I said, wait a second. Science means you follow a procedure, you get a predictable result. That's what this Vedic knowledge is. Krishna is telling us in Bhagavad Gita, do like this, do like this, do, you get this result. And he explains to Arjuna, if you follow the mode of passion, this is going to be your result. If you follow the mode of ignorance, Arjuna, this is going to be your result. If you follow the mode of goodness, you'll get different results. They're not the same. Read Bhagavad Gita carefully. You'll see and it goes throughout. In chapter 14, 16, 17, 18, time and time again, there is different results in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And then there's another one, spiritual. When you transcend the modes of nature and you surrender to Krishna, you get even a different result. So that's science. That's science. There's a science to chanting. Yes, there's a science. It's not, I'm done. No, there's a science. There are 10 offenses. There is a particular technique that you pay attention. And as Prabhupada teaches, you chant like a child crying for its mother with some feeling. Not just, and I fall asleep. That's not chanting. Chanting means Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. If somebody is chanting with attention, they cannot fall asleep. There is this joke. How you can get someone to sleep very easily? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. How do you wake somebody up? Shridha Vijaja. Oh! Prasad, I'm awake now. Om Namo Bhagavate. Yes. I used to love it. It happens all the time. You're sitting in a class, you notice somebody is sleeping. So you just touch them to wake up. I'm not sleeping. Human nature is very predictable. So it's a science. It's a science. As I've explained a billion times, especially to Westerners, that if this chanting was not science, I would have stopped the second day. Because when you surrender to a spiritual master, you vow to chant on these beads every day, 16 rounds. From the first day. So youth, and I've explained this to the Americans especially. Do I look like the kind of person that is going to do something for 2-3 hours and not get something from it? Trust me, I'm not. But I am living proof of the science. If I apply myself properly, I get the result. And yes, I look forward to chanting. I look forward to coming here and sharing before you. I enjoy it because it's a science. And I know what is going to happen while I'm speaking, and I know what's going to happen after. While I'm speaking, what's happening? Krishna in my heart is helping me. He is helping me. And on the way home tonight, I'll be like this. Haribo. That's why I do this. So you see, Radha Raman Bhagavan Ki. The sages continue, please, therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. This is a nice question. This is a nice thing, what the sages. So another point here is, Sutta Goswami is elderly. Generally speaking, when somebody is advanced in age, they have something that young people don't have. Wisdom. Young people can have knowledge, but knowledge is different from wisdom. Just like those of you who have grandchildren. Right? So, your son or daughter now has children, and they're just learning what you've already gone through. So, when grandma or grandpa try to give some little hint, they should listen, because they have wisdom. Yes. Very important. That's why we see in the Vedic literatures, Mahabharata, a good example, they would listen to the elders, Bhishma, like that, because they have that thing called wisdom. They've lived through it. Learning from those who have been through it is very valuable. So this Sutta Goswami, he's the eldest, so he has lots of experience. So what do they want to know? What is the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general? This is important. They're not selfish. They're not asking Sutta, what's good for us? No, that's not a saintly person. A saintly person is interested in everyone. Therefore, he is liberal. He's not just interested in the 1%. The saintly person is interested for the well-being of the 100%, everybody, rich and poor. So they want to know what is the absolute, absolute meaning in all times, places, circumstances. What is the best thing? That. So now we're hitting on, once we start entering this kind of talk, we're talking about Vedanta. Vedanta. Where does knowledge end? Some people think knowledge means an unlimited progression. No. There has to be a conclusion. There has to be resolution. That's why you'll see throughout Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say? Therefore. Throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying this, 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 and this. Then he says, therefore, meaning conclusion. Nobody wants, let's say you go to a movie. So you don't want the movie to go on for 8 hours, and at the end of the movie, it doesn't. No, you want to go to a good movie, which has a conclusion that's favorable. Right? So same way, knowledge, Vedanta means where does knowledge end? Bhagavatam is that Vedanta. The end of knowledge. Where does it wind up? Where does it go? What's the whole point? That's why people here in the West, they become frustrated. They go to 4, 6, 8 years of college, then they have to work at Starbucks. What's the point? They got all this knowledge, but no job. But The sages want to know what is the ultimate absolute good for the people in general. Now comes one of my favorite verses. I love this verse. So the sages now say, O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. Because in the Satya Yuga, the lifespan was 100,000 years. Like Dhruva. Dhruva ruled the earth for 36,000 years. Not bad. Then you had Treta Yuga. People would live for 10,000 years. Then in Dwarapara Yuga, they would live for 1,000 years. Kali Yuga, maybe 100. And as Kali Yuga progresses, the number goes down, down, down. At the end of Kali Yuga, Prabhupada says, if you're 30 years old, you'll be considered an old man. I mean, you won't make it. And what will they do? At the end of Kali Yuga, human society will have become like pygmies. You know what is pygmy? And there'll be no food other than animals. There'll be no fruits, no vegetables. And so what will they do? They'll take the grandpa, throw him on top of the roof, kill him, and eat. That's the end of Kali Yuga. Don't worry, you have 427,000 years before that happens. But don't stick around. As I said before, go back home, back to Godhead as quickly as possible. That's not the kind of movie you want to see, the ending days of Kali Yuga. The Iron Age. Satya Yuga was the Golden Age. Treta Yuga was, I can't remember, Dwarpa is copper and Kali is iron. I forget what. Silver. Oh, we have, thank you. We have some scholars. So nice to get help from the scholars. Jai. Silver, then copper, and now Iron Age. Men have but short lives. Now you tell me if this statement is correct. So in the age of Kali, people are quarrelsome. Yes or no? What's the proof? The news. You turn on the news, what's the story? Right? Everybody's quarreling. Whether it be Israel and Palestine, right? Then you've got Putin quarreling with, what's that country? Ukraine, right? And then what to speak of Africa? That place is like nuts. Boko Raton and, all right? Then you all know better than me what's going on in Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran. Right? And you know very well your history with Pakistan. I don't have to tell you there. Right? And now even in America, quarreling. Right? The big case in Missouri that they're going to decide on. How the cops are just shooting everybody. Anyway. Now America. So, you all agree Kali Yuga is maybe... Nah, I won't go there. It's all right. So, Kali Yuga is quarrelsome. People in this age are lazy. Would you agree? Not you. Not you. But you know that there are many lazy people, right? People are misguided. Is that an accurate assessment? Unlucky. And here's the best one. And above all, always disturbed. Try tomorrow's Monday morning. You're going to work. You look at the next car over and you can just tell the guy is just... Sometimes when I'm driving in my car and I have my signs on the side, like it happened today, somebody was looking at me like... So I just smiled. Hare Krishna. Because they're always disturbed. about one thing or another. And how can you tell? All you have to do is do... Give me a good out here for a second. All you have to do is this.
What are you talking about?
They're ready to fight you, right? Just if you bump into them, or what to speak, you cut them off on the freeway. Oh, watch out. Some guys will come out with a gun. You cut me off. Everybody's disturbed. This word is very important now. Shanti, shanti. The Americans have a different word. Chill out, man, chill out. But it's the same concept. Same concept. Problem is, when somebody's disturbed, they don't want to hear chill out or shanti. That's why this verse is so... This is what's so great about Bhagavatam. It's telling you what to expect. There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them, there are many prescribed duties, which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, so that by such instruction, their hearts may be fully satisfied. So this is the purpose of reading our Vedic literatures. There are many purposes, but here's one purpose. The idea is that by reading Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, you should become very happy in your heart. That is what is so great. I have lots of experience with this. Throughout my life, there have been problems and my mind was disturbed, but I had enough sense at those times. I took a time out. Things are happening too fast. So I took a time out and spent an hour or two just reading Bhagavatam or the Gita or Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then you calm down. You get the answer to your problem. Because it's all there. Either you read Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, you read a Vedic literature, within time, the answer is like this. It's just like this. Right? You all heard that beautiful sound, right? It's very clear, the sound of the... Or when you ring the bell in the temple. Ding! Right? That's what the effect is of nicely sitting down and reading these Vedic literatures. It's like a bell. And it rings, and it's everything becomes clear. That's why we read these books. It's called self-help. Yes, that's a big term nowadays, self-help. I don't need a psychiatrist. My psychiatrist is Srila Prabhupada. My psychiatrist is Krishna. If my mind is disturbed, I take a time out. And I spend quality time with Krishna, or today it was Srimad Bhagavatam. So that their hearts may be fully satisfied. Yes, we want that full satisfaction. And it's there. It's there. All you have to do is take advantage of it. But the problem is, let's go back to the previous verse. Why don't we become satisfied? We're quarrelsome. Lazy. Yes, we're so lazy that we don't pick up Bhagavad Gita. It's easier to watch television. In other words, it's easier to flick the remote, but to pick up Bhagavad Gita, that's so... Lazy, misguided, unlucky, and always disturbed. The sages now say, all blessings upon you, O Suta Goswami. You know for what purpose the personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudeva. In other words, they also want to hear about Krishna Lila. But they'll have to wait to the 10th canto, because you don't hear about Krishna and his janma karma chame divyam until canto 10, because you need 9 cantos of preliminary instruction, so that when you read 10th canto, you'll properly understand. I'm going to stop here. Thank you very much. May Krishna bless you, protect you, maintain you. I hope I can come back next month. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.